Hello and welcome to Podcast by the Peer, the podcast where freelance copywriters talk about all things freelancing and copywriting. Whether you're a seasoned copywriter or just dipping your toe into the world of words, pull up a deck chair and join us as we dive into the minds of some of our freelance favourites. I'm your host, Tom Davies, a freelance copywriter based in Brighton. And today, I'm joined by copywriting cultivator, brand voice scintillator, and the Adam Driver obsessinator. It's the Hellraiser herself, Emma Cowley. Welcome to the show, Emma.
Well, thank you for having me. What a great intro.
I had to get the Adam Driver reference in there.
Yeah, you've got to, really. He's as much as part of my brand as I am by this point.
Right then, too niche or not too niche? That is the question for today's episode. Or if you're listening from across the pond, too niche or not too niche? But before we talk into today's topic, Emma, can you tell our listeners who you are and how you became a freelance copywriter?
Yes, I can do that. My name's Emma. I'm a freelance B2C copywriter for lifestyle and music, but it wasn't always so. I actually started in a customer service role for an online aquatic retailer. And the only reason I got the job is because I turned up fresh from my creative writing, creative and professional masters. I was fresh graduated. So I had all of this stuff that I'd written as part of my masters, so like newsletters and articles and this and that. And I brought it along and I was like, look, we can do a newsletter and I'll do your product descriptions and I'll get you on social media and we can do all this stuff. And they basically saw a chump who would do two jobs for the price of one. And I liked the writing side of it so much. It was just such a small part of my job that I thought, I want to do this for my real job. So I started looking around for copywriting opportunities. I didn't actually know that's what it was called at the time, though. I wasn't aware that copywriting really was a job you could do until I started looking for similar roles. And I was like, oh, okay, this is a job that exists. So then I got my very first proper copywriting job at printed.com. And basically, I was the only writer there and I came in as a junior. So their tone of voice was basically just my voice. But they loved it and it just went with the brand really well. And I stayed with them for ages and I wrote across their portfolio of different brands. So I had an opportunity to develop voice and stuff like that. And it got to the end of like 4 or 5 years with them. I was still the only writer. I was unbelievably comfortable, unbelievably happy. And I was like, I'm going to have to burn this shit to the ground. Like, this can't continue. What, contentment and happiness? No, like there's no challenge here anymore. So I was like, okay, I'm going to just completely go freelance. And I think it was the best move for me at the time because I will always defer to authority. Like I love to just be told what to do and then I can be as creative and as crazy as I want because someone else is driving. So when I had to take control of things, that really was a test of my skill. And to be honest, ever since I've just done things I never imagined I'd ever get to do. I mean, I've written scripts for robots and interviewed celebrities and been published in print. It's crazy stuff I never imagined. So that's where I am now compared to where I started as a customer service representative that was also writing copy.
Oh, wow. And you've never looked back.
Yeah, well, I have a bit because sometimes you just think, wouldn't it be nice if someone was just telling me what to do and I just got to write copy and that was just my job?
Well, it's great to have you on the show, Emma. So today's topic is about niching, whether it's something you should do as a freelance copywriter, whether you're starting out or well under your way making a living selling words. And it's fair to say it's a polarizing subject, maybe the most polarizing subject within the world of freelance copywriting. And where generalist copywriters get a nosebleed at the thought of writing for the same industry every day, niches might tell you, you need a niche to get rich. For the record, I'm a generalist copywriter. And if you visit Emma's amazing website, Jot Jot Boom, you'll see Emma's a niche writer for music and lifestyle brands. So hopefully, listener, in the next 30 minutes, you'll get a balanced view what road is right for you, whether that's niching or being a generalist. So Emma, let's keep this friendly. Maybe a good place to start is to briefly tell listeners, what is a niche? And secondly, how did you land on your niche, music and lifestyle?
a niche is essentially a specialism, right? And I think as copywriters, we've got several different options ahead of us. We can specialize in copy format. So you could be a white paper specialist or a direct response specialist or a website copy specialist, or you could specialize in a discipline like editing or translating or proofreading or brand. And then you've got the option to specialize in a sector like finance or tech or lifestyle, like what I do. So there's lots of different ways you could specialize without limiting your options. I came to my specialism because when I started out, I was a generalist because, as I mentioned just now, I came from print. So all I'd been writing about for years was paper and print and technical stuff like that. And I really wanted to try on other things and just have a go. And after 2 years, I was making pretty good money quite quickly because I had a lot of contacts, and people in print are very incestuous. They like to work with people that they know, like they keep it all in the family. Once you've proven that you've got the skill, you'll never get away from print. I still work with printers even now, and that's not even what I do anymore. So I decided, like, at the end of it, I've made good money, but I'm not happy. I'm dissatisfied. Something needs to change. So I thought, I'm just going to start doing only the jobs that I've enjoyed. And when I looked at everything I'd done, the projects I enjoyed most tended to be for fashion, beauty, health. So I thought, well, that's where I want to be. I'd like more clients like that, please. So I tailored my portfolio and changed everything up to appeal to that. But also, I have like a wealth of specialist knowledge that I was like, well, I may as well monetize this knowledge of alternative music and music promotion and distribution, but also horror films and the occult and even just alternative culture at large. Like, I just thought, it's stuff that not everybody knows about. So if I can monetize it and put it to work, that would just be the best fun ever. And it is. It looks like I'm having fun because I really am.
Oh, lovely. And just to follow on from that, do you think it's always a case that you find your niche, or does your niche find you? Can you find your niche through mistakes? Like, I've done it myself. I agree to a project. I think this is playing well. It's the one for me. I can't wait to get involved with this. And then you get to that midway point and you think, well, I would pay double to get out of this project right now. I'm really not enjoying this. It's awful. Why did I agree to this? I hate myself. Do you think that you can perhaps find your niche also just by experiencing mistakes?
Well, yeah, I think it's just the flip reverse of finding your niche. So if you're left with a lot of projects that you didn't like, well, now you know what you don't like. So let's look at what other options are left to you and begin to explore those. I think that's kind of a negative way to come to it, but people come to it in their own way, don't they? I prefer to follow my passion and get to it that way. I just think whichever way it happens, it pays to be very self-aware, because there's a tendency for us to fall into a rut of what we're doing and plod along, which is why I think regular reviews, be they quarterly or annually, where you sit down, look at everything that you've done for the year, who have you worked with, what have you worked on, how much did you earn, how do you feel, and then think, do I want to carry on with this or do I want to change what I'm doing? And always make sure that you're checking in with yourself and always building the kind of career and the kind of business that fulfills you as well as your bank account.
Yeah, great advice. Really agree with that. And something I actually need to do more myself. Let's talk about starting out. So, because I think this is where the dilemma is. I think for many new freelance copywriters, they're new to the game and they're faced with this question, aren't they? If I niche, I'm potentially closing the door on lots of other projects. And as a new writer with a limited portfolio, they're trying to pay the bills. Is it wise to niche straight away, or are you starving your business of that early growth it needs to survive?
Well, as you say, the argument is, from my perspective, is equally weighted. You'll find people out there that say, if you're starting out, choosing a niche is your best route to getting clients through the door quickly, because you can target everything. You can optimize your entire site. You can own that niche. You can become the person. And then you've got something when someone is searching on LinkedIn for tech copywriter, you immediately come up. And there's kind of a straight away, you've assigned yourself a benefit. Do you know what I mean? When someone's looking for something, they can contextualize the value that you're bringing because that is what they've intentionally searched for. I don't know if I'm articulating that properly, but I find that as copywriters, it's difficult to describe what we do because copy is everything, isn't it? It's everywhere. It's every part of the business has copy. But you can't say to someone, I just do everything, because they can't contextualize the benefit they're getting from that. Whereas if you say, I am a tech copywriter who specializes in case studies and white papers, the benefit that the potential customer is will get is immediate. And especially if you're just starting out marketing your own business, it's much easier for you to be able to do it that way. It's not as difficult to sell yourself because the niche does half the job for you. But then again, as you say, are you closing the door to potential work? So my answer to this is always just do what you fucking want. It's your business. What feels good to you? What feels right? In your current circumstance, what is the best thing for you financially? What's the best thing for you in terms of your interests, your knowledge, your passion? Do what you want. If you start searching online, you're going to find so much for and against. You'll just turn yourself around in circles. Because I think that they're both very valid points and they've both got pros and cons. So do what you fucking want.
Yeah. I think what scares me most about niching is just the permanence of it. And I think just finding a niche that you're passionate about is just so important because you're committing to it for years, if not decades. Beyond the love for an industry, whatever that might be, music, travel, fintech, you've got to be sure it's an industry that's profitable with like a really healthy demand for your skill set. So niching in, I don't know, like vegan friendly cement is going to be quite limited on leads. So is there a way to be sure your niche is profitable from the outset, Emma?
I think that things change all the time, right? So I think that tethering your horse to a cart for 10 years is a bit much. I think that because we're freelance, we can change whatever we want whenever we want to, bearing in mind it will take time to get momentum back up again once you've changed. So it's worth really considering it. So I think before you choose a niche, go out there. If profitability is what you're really looking for, because it doesn't always have to be about passion, right? Niching can also be about what earns me the most money quickly, or what do I already have skills in that I can start monetizing now because I need to earn now. I think go away and look at some industry reports. There's going to be tons out there for burgeoning industries for the year, which industries are showing the highest growth, and then maybe thinking that would be a good place to move into. There are loads and loads of kind of industry reports out there that you could look at and maybe sense check every year. But as a general rule, I'm going to say tech is usually very lucrative. So is health. That usually is a given. Finance as well. There are three industries that seem to always consistently be at the top of the most profitable niches. So you can't really go far wrong unless those bore the shit out of you, in which case you're going to earn a lot of money, but you're going to hate your life. So it's your choice really, isn't it?
Okay. So we've committed to write for a specific industry. There's no turning back. What's the best way then to market ourselves as the go-to writer, let's say the music industry? What can we do to tattoo our name in the minds of potential clients?
First, I think that you have to put it everywhere. Like every social media bio, your website, it has to be in the meta descriptions of all of your pages. You have to get that shit everywhere. You have to be on social media showing work that you've already done in the sector, schmoozing with people from the sector, showing results that you got for people in the sector, showing and demonstrating your knowledge by talking about topical things within that sector. You have to become known as the go-to for that. And the biggest secret is just talk about it everywhere all the time. Not very difficult. Just talk about it everywhere all the time. It has to be whoever's discovering you, wherever they land or arrive, it has to be there in front of them. And then if they go and check you out somewhere else, the same consistent message needs to be there too. And I think that people need to see things a certain number of times before it sinks in. And that's what you become known for as well. The repetition is what helps it penetrate the minds of everyone. So I think just keep talking about it. It's going to feel weird. It's going to feel repetitive because it is. But that's the only way I think to do it.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, I think it's a good time as any in the show to say I'm a massive fan of your YouTube channel, Kiss My A's. And if you haven't subscribed, listener, check it out because there's so much useful information. It's all free. And there are actually one or two videos that deep dive into marketing yourself as a niche. And one of the standout lines from one of those videos, Emma, is you saying, when you niche, you're doing yourself a massive marketing favor.
Yeah, well, that's true. I stand by that. I can't remember how many years ago I said that, but yeah, I mean, you've made it easy for yourself, haven't you, to become known for a thing. And I'm even known for stuff that was not intentional for me to become known for. I've had people refer to me as the Witchy Freelancer, which is the name of an ebook that I published a couple of years ago. And I wasn't even really referring to myself in that title, I suppose, but it stuck. So I guess it also is a tangent to that. Just be careful what you're putting out there about yourself, because then that could just be what you are.
Yeah. You're a victim of your own brand. You're now a witch.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. I'm some kind of word sorceress now in the minds of the public, and I don't mind it. Good. Fear me. You're right to.
Right, Emma, I've got one more question to ask before we move on to listener questions.
Yeah.
It's about unniching, or I call it reverse niching. What happens if you do get fed up writing for a single industry? Is it too late to reinvent yourself as a generalist or a niche writer in another industry? As I said earlier, there's just a feeling of permanence with it with me, and I don't know if that is just me, but is there a way back once you sell your soul to a sector?
Well, I think it's important to look at why it's no longer working for you for a start before you change anything. Let's not be hasty. Think about, is it the types of tasks that you're doing? Because if so, you can just shift slightly and be like, well, now I'm only doing email newsletters, or I only do print marketing or whatever, because you've realized that you absolutely fucking hate writing websites. You can change that. Or maybe it's the types of people that you're working for within your niche. So it might transpire that actually the agency relationship makes you want to rip your skin off, in which case work with clients directly then and see if you feel any differently. And if after making those tweaks, you're still really not loving life, I would say, yeah, unniche, do what you want. Nothing's forever. We've got the power to change things how we want them to be as freelancers. So I think it's another good PR opportunity, isn't it, to promote yourself and just be like, hey, guys, you knew me as a health writer, but now I'm in a completely different niche. I think it's possible, but I do think don't be hasty. Have a little experiment first and then really do your homework on the new place that you're moving to, just to make sure that you're not going to end up out of the frying pan and into the fire, as Tolkien once said.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Great advice. Thanks, Emma. So with that said, what is our conclusion? Do freelance copywriters need to niche?
Do what you fucking want, mate. It's your business. Have a good time if you niche. You can have a good time if you don't. It all depends on what you want, what you like. Every freelancer has different goals. And what's great about being freelance is that your goals can be whatever you want them to be. Just be sure that you know what they are before you get started. And then you can always adapt later on down the line. Don't focus on what other people are doing. Focus on what you want to get from your business and then do that. That's my advice. Do what you want, mate.
Go do what you want, listener. Go and do what you want.
That's YOLO.
Yeah. Right. Listener questions. Here we go. So the first listener question is from copywriter and tone of voice nerd, Felicity Wild, who asks, how do you keep up your witchy and very cool persona so consistently across all channels?
I've been asked this a couple of times, and the honest answer is, it's just my personality. I'm not, there is no clever tone of voice. It's just me. writing in my own voice with just a mentality of like, fuck it. I'm in charge of my own marketing. I'm the one that makes the rules. I'm going to be as brazen as I want because not enough people are. So maybe if they see me out here just being 100% myself, they might feel confident to do that as well. So it's just me. That's the trick to consistency, just doing your own thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally working for you. I said before I call that I'm just a massive fan of all of your content. It's brilliant. I mean, just kind of another question off the back of that. Did you find your voice straight away or did it take some time?
Yeah, I found it straight away. I knew how I wanted to be. Right. I think clients choose to work with freelancers as much as they do the freelance business. Do you know what I mean? Cultural fit is a huge thing when you're bringing an outsider into your company to work on a project, and they have to know that your personality and your ethos and your approach is, it marries well with theirs. And I think a huge way to demonstrate cultural fit is to showcase your personality and your interests and stuff. I've been hired twice based off of a band shirt I was wearing in a photo on the homepage of my website. I used to have a picture of myself in a Trivium t-shirt, and two people reached out and were like, oh my God, I love Trivium. Did you hear blah, 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 blah? By the way, would you be interested? I was actually very excited when I first did my freelance website. I was like, oh, no one is here to tell me I can't write what I want to do. So this bitch is going to tear shit up. I just went in and wrote a blog post about, I used an analogy about something being as useless as the Kardashians or learning to fire cobras out of a cannon. And I was just like, do you know what? Just because I'm a professional business doesn't mean I have to be professional.
Oh, exactly. And that is a whole...
So I was like, yeah, just let people catch the vibe. There are brands out there that can do it, so I can do it as well. And then hopefully people are going to be down with the vibe, and those are the people that hire me.
Yep, it's working for you. It's brilliant. Right. Next question. Freelance copywriter for impactful purpose-driven brands, Andy Robinson asks, how beneficial have YouTube and TikTok been for Jot Jot Boom?
YouTube, not really. I was only ever doing it because I wanted to do it. I liked it. I enjoyed it. The benefit that it did have was that it allowed people to see me and hear me. And I was able to talk about things in an authoritative way, and people could feel confident in my ability. And then I got more peer referrals through that, and invitations to speak at events and stuff, which I never said yes to because that would be a fucking disaster. But it gained me publicity. But the real one is TikTok, which I've not been on for really that long. But that's where all my clients are. All the kind of indie brands for alternative and witchy folk, and a lot of indie music labels are on there and stuff. So that's where my people are. And I had a couple of posts go viral recently, and I've had quite a few leads off of the back of it, albeit they're not necessarily people that I'd want to work with. I should probably do a TikTok telling people what I'm all about, because I'm not going to write any anti-aging bullshit or diet shit or anything like that. That's not my vibe. So TikTok, absolutely, because I've just been able to go in. There's a lot of small businesses on there looking for free marketing advice. They don't really know what they're doing. They've set up their business and they're like, well, I've got no idea how to talk or what I should be saying, or that they really question themselves when it comes to their own marketing. So by putting out a lot of posts that coach people through it or where they can go to get started, people have been really into it. So that's very beneficial, but YouTube, no, not at all.
Interesting. I've not delved into TikTok yet. So,
it's a hellhole. It really is. I've never had so many people be so willing to tear me down for giving them free advice. It's astounding.
Not we humans.
Yeah.
Right. I've got a bonus question for you. Oh. I just want to know the answer to this. What is it like to have an edition of Nick Parker's Tone Knot newsletter devoted to the amazing web copy you wrote for Electric Sugar? That must have been a proper wow moment.
Do you know what? It really still stands out as one of the highlights of my career, because the brands that he has featured, like Penhaligon's and the CIA, I can't believe my work is alongside.
Yeah,
I can't believe it. Yeah.
If you haven't read that web copy, go to Electric Sugar or go to Emma's website. It is amazing to be on Tone Knob. You know, that's saying you're doing something right, Emma.
Right? Like, wow. I mean, that's it, isn't it? That is it.
Yeah. Wow.
You give up after that, don't you? You just lay face down on the floor and don't do any more work ever, because how could you get better than that? You can't. It's you over. Can't. It's over for me now. I've had my salad days.
Yeah. Right then. We can't let you go, Emma, without doing our feature, which is Name That Attraction. And with every guest, we ask them to come up with a name and strapline for a new attraction coming to Brighton Pier. It's all fictional, of course. Emma, my previous guest, Jonathan Wilcock, has set your attraction task, which is to come up with a name and strapline for the world's worst mime artist. So what have you got for us?
I didn't do a strapline. God damn. This was really hard. I don't appreciate J-Dubs coming at me so hard with that one. Because my first thought, I was like, oh, Jemima. And everything I was thinking of afterwards, my mind was like, no, Jemima. That's really funny because it's like, do you mime her? And I just thought, don't say that out loud to another human, whatever you do. And now I've just done it. I really don't know. I think that some of my favorite ideas was Big Sherrod. And like, as a person, their name is Big Sherrod, because obviously they don't realize that their whole career is a joke because they're not very good. And they work for Invisible Talent, which is an agency for people.
That's got mileage. Yeah.
Well, you're not able to see the talent. On any level, Big Sherrod. I also thought another name that would be quite good is just Hans. You know, like H-A-N-S, Hans.
Yep. Right.
Yeah. So I think in total, I'm going to say I have failed the challenge because I had too many half-baked ideas and not enough commitment. I even Googled pictures of mimes.
Right.
And then I went down a Charlie Chaplin tunnel. And just got completely sidetracked. So I'm going to say Big Sherrod.
Yeah, this guy
who works for Invisible Talent.
I like that. And maybe we can get our listeners to come up with a strapline. How about that?
Yeah, that might be nice. Joint effort.
Yeah. And we can blame Jonathan for a pretty challenging task there.
Yeah, well, I'm sure to some people that's not going to be challenging at all. At first, when I heard it, I was like, oh, I'm going to have a ton of ideas for this. And the more I thought about it, Jemima just got in the way.
Well, speaking about tasks, our next guest on the show is Vicky Ross. So would you like to set the new attraction task for Vicky?
I would like Vicky to name a ghost train.
Name and a strap line?
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Okay.
A ghost train. Yeah. I think that could be really fun. I've never been on a ghost train on Brighton Pier. I've been on one Southend Pier and it was awful in the best way.
There is a ghost train, I think, on Brighton Pier.
Oh, is it? I haven't been down on the pier for a lot. Because I'm like, Brighton was my city when I was growing up. Because I'm from Eastbourne. So if you wanted to go to town, you went to Brighton. So I've spent a lot of time on that pier over the years.
Yeah. It's still there. It's still there.
Have you ever ridden that slingshot thing? You know, that thing with the arm that flings you up?
No, I'm not sure I'd get off that alive.
No, it's awful. Don't do it. Don't go on it.
Maybe I'd go on it as a punishment if I miss a deadline or something.
Yeah. Or just as a punishment, pump loads of money into the claw machines and just never win anything.
God, don't, honestly.
I've lost so much money on that pier.
Brighton Pier for you, ladies and gentlemen. Right, Emma, if people want to hear more from you, where can they find you?
They can take out a Ouija board and light some candles and drink the blood of a virgin. And I will appear in the mirror, but only for 3 seconds. Or just go to jotjotboom.com or find me on TikTok at EJ Cownley, or come find me on LinkedIn. I'm just messing around over there, having me a good time. So if you enjoy having a good time on LinkedIn and while learning cool and interesting things, come follow me.
There you go, listeners. And I strongly advise you to connect with Emma on LinkedIn if you're not already. Right. Okay. Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Emma. And if you found this episode useful, do consider leaving a review for the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you want to join me for a chinwag about freelancing or copywriting, do drop me a line at coastalcopy.co.uk. And I'll see you next time on Podcast by the Peer. This episode of Podcast by the Peer is sponsored by Transform Personal Training based in Hove. If you want to get fitter, healthier, and happier, but don't know your push-ups from your pull-ups, then Transform Personal Training's group sessions are for you. As part of a small group of up to six people, you'll receive personalized coaching, guidance, and support to reach your fitness goals. No matter your age, weight, or current fitness levels, Transform's group sessions are the fun and friendly way to bring exercise back into your busy timetable. If you'd like to try a session for free with absolutely no obligation, visit transformpthove.co.uk. That's transformpthove.co.uk and use the discount code PODCAST with your inquiry. See you next time.